If I had worked on this show a generation ago and I had to nail down a fact, I'd head to a shelf of encyclopedias. And if I needed a back issue of a newspaper, I'd go to my local library and see if they had an old yellowed copy in their archives. Now we can learn much more, much faster. We barely even need to know how to spell the thing we're looking for, because whatever, Google knows how to spell it. Nicholas Carr argues that all this empowerment is paradoxically slowing us down and dulling our senses. He's the author of The Glass Cage, Automation and Us. Nick Carr, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
So you've made this argument that automation is not so great, but is it a bad thing to have an automated system find you a date or find you a house or the many, many things that we now turn to computers to, you know, find answers for?
No. You know, the history of technology is, in one sense, is entirely a history of finding ways to offload things to machines or to tools. But what we're beginning to see in many different areas is people very quickly become too dependent on the automated system. And certainly the people who write the programs and sell the programs are interested in making us really dependent on them. And what happens is you begin to see an erosion of your own skills, and that makes you even more dependent on the system. And that becomes a kind of cycle, which in the end, whether it's in a professional sphere or a personal sphere, can leave us less engaged with the world, less talented, and more subject to not only using the software in a good way, but almost allowing it to manipulate us. We don't think outside of the software.
So let me question that, because I feel like it's been happening forever. So I have no idea how to make clothes. But I guarantee you, you go back enough generations, and somebody in my family did know how to make clothes. And I've just basically completely outsourced that to some machine that made the clothes that I'm wearing today. But I don't know that that's such a bad thing, because if I had to make my own clothes, I couldn't be hosting a radio show. I'd be home all day, you know, knitting or whatever and you know, making my own bread and that. Uh-huh. So isn't there some good things about sort of offloading that to machines so we can do different things?
If that's the way it plays out, that can be very good. Unfortunately, what we're seeing now is something different happening. You automate a particular skill, and whether it's, you know, crafting something in a factory or a doctor making a diagnosis or an architect designing a building, and the computer is taking over so many aspects of it, including, you know, analysis and judgment making, decision making functions, that instead of lifting the worker up to higher levels, it's turning workers into computer operators. How do you do these things so we make sure that people have interesting things to do? A simple example is of the pocket calculator. Controversial thing at one point. Everybody thought, you know, students would forget how to, never learn how to do arithmetic or whatever. It turns out that a calculator can be used in a good way or in a bad way. And in the good way, you let a student master certain arithmetic skills, for instance. And then once they've mastered them, then you bring in the calculator and say, now that it's routine, use the calculator to do it. And that provides you time and mental energy to devote to interesting things. What we know about skills is often it means developing mastery at one level, and that allows you to get to the next and to the next and to the next. If you just decide to give jobs to computers because computers can do them without regard to whether the human being has actually mastered the skill, then we get into a situation where we're cutting ourselves off from kind of rising through different levels of talent to ever more satisfying pursuits.
So give me an example of a few professions where you think they've just become less satisfying because, as you say, people are becoming computer operators.
One area is aviation. Let me start by saying that the history of automation from 100 years ago with the invention of the autopilot in aviation has been a very positive story. Safety has gone up enormously, and if you fly at all, that's something to be very happy about. But recently, we've seen that so many functions in flight have been computerized that pilots in general spend very, very little time actually manually controlling the plane, 3 minutes maybe on an average flight. And what happens is they fall victim to what researchers term automation complacency. They're not practicing their skills. They're not called upon to engage with their surroundings, and they begin to tune out. And that can create a dangerous system if the autopilot fails, as it sometimes does, and suddenly the pilot, the human, becomes the kind of last defense, but they've tuned out and they can have trouble reorienting themselves.
Okay, but let me compare that that aviation example to another realm where automation sort of has yet to really infiltrate, which is driving. Uh-huh. Most of us drive when we don't have any. I mean, there are automated cars, but they sort of haven't reached this mainstream like autopilot has. And we see a lot of drunk driving, a lot of people who are too tired really to be driving, people who get distracted either because they're on the phone or because their kids are yelling at each other in the back of the car or whatever. Is that preferable? Because at least we're keeping our skills alive.
There's two things to think about, I think. And any time you're confronted with a counterargument, well, you know, people are dying in crashes, it's very hard to kind of dispute it. But let me first dispute it a little bit. One thing we know is that people may complain about driving, and often it's painful if you're stuck in traffic jam, but people actually, in general, enjoy driving. And as we think about turning that activity or any activity over to computers, I think it's worth taking into account what makes us happy, what makes us feel fulfilled, what gives us pleasure, because actually that's a pretty important part of life. We are living creatures. And I don't think it's just a matter of how efficient is this going to be, how quickly and safely can we get from point A to point B. The bigger and more immediate issue is we're not going to have fully automated cars anytime soon. Even Google, you know, its automatic cars are incredible feats of engineering. But even they, you need a human being in there for lots of different situations that the computer can't handle. We have to recognize that, in fact, what we're going to have is we're going to have the computer handling part of the driving and the human being also there to handle part of the driving. And we better make sure that we get the best of both of those, best of the technology and best of the human being.
And you worry the human being's skills are going to atrophy.
Yes.
Yeah, they're just going to be sitting there most of the time and hanging out.
And you'll see the same thing with pilots. You know, if you have adaptive cruise control that is, you know, handling the brakes and the acceleration, and you have automatic lane centering technology that keeps you centered, and we already have those in high-end cars, then the danger is that people tune out. And so when an emergency happens, and let me say, first of all, that will probably avoid some accidents, you know, rear-end collisions and stuff when people just do stupid things. On the other hand, it also means that if a deer jumps out in front of you or something, you know, you're probably going to be even more distracted and less aware. Human beings are important in these processes, and they're not just something, you know, some unfortunate thing we have to add to the system. We have to design these systems with ourselves in mind.
Do you ever get anybody saying to you, well, you know, I think that automation has made me smarter? Whether it is playing video games online where there's a lot of tasks that I'm juggling at the same time, and maybe there's even an educational component to that, to doing sort of massive online learning. You know, this has allowed me to do things and to think in ways that I never have before.
Absolutely, and they're often right. We can design software that encourages the development of skills because we know how to do that. You get people to practice things, to rehearse things, to be challenged by things. And once they've mastered them, you raise them up to the next challenge. And guess what? Video gaming is a good example of that. It's good games, at least, do encourage everything we know about how you build skills. So you take on one particular mission, one particular challenge, and you work on it over and over again until you master it. And then you get something harder. And it seems to me that one of the big questions before us is, will we encourage, through what we buy and what we use, will we encourage programmers to create software and create automated systems that take into account what makes us feel satisfied and fulfilled and learn stuff, or take the other route that they just are worried about, you know, pure efficiency and kind of giving everything possible to the computer without worrying about what it means for the person.
Now, obviously, you wrote this book, I'm guessing, with a word processor.
Yes.
Right? I'm guessing you Wikipedia'd certain things, Googled certain things, correct?
Googled, yeah.
Okay. Do you feel like in your own life you've been helped by automation on balance, or it's been detrimental? I mean, how do you sort of, when you think about the personal calculus, how does it come out?
I think I've certainly been helped by the ease of researching online. So by Google, things like that. I am very aware that it's best to use even those tools it's best to use them carefully to kind of know how Google works so you know when you might be missing something important. But there's no doubt that the automation of certain filtering and library type functions has allowed me to kind of do things really quickly that don't necessarily, that spending more time on them wouldn't necessarily have helped the quality of my work. It's clear to me that software and online tools and things, when designed well and used well, can play a very important role in kind of freeing up some activities so you can concentrate on the actual writing, synthesizing of ideas and stuff. So I think there are some downsides to word processing, but they're very kind of esoteric about what it means to be able to, you know, cut and paste very quickly, as opposed to being forced when you were typing something manually, you actually had to compose it more in your mind because you knew you couldn't easily fiddle around with it. And I think that had some advantages, but that's a narrow kind of thing. I think it really is more on the disengagement is where I really feel it, that it's very easy to start to do more and more things through screens and to not engage with the world in a rich, focused, attentive way. And that's one thing that I'm really trying to struggle with because I think it is easy to kind of, to use my title, to find yourself in this glass cage of computer screens. It's very important, I think, for the richness and, you know, satisfaction in our lives to realize that that's not what we were designed to do. It can be very helpful, but if that's what you spend most of your time doing, it's going to be kind of unsatisfying.
Nicholas Carr is the author of The Glass Cage, Automation and Us, and The Shallows, among other books. Nicholas Carr, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Kara.
From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub. We're on Twitter at iHubRadio. We'll be right back. You're dreaming how we kiss, not with our lips.